Have you been considering starting a farm, but you're really not sure what to do or how to get started? In this episode, the Knox brothers dig into all of the specifics. More so, in fact, they'll tell you how to dominate the neighborhood. As always, I'm your San Francisco connection and host, Sean Conkler. Thanks for joining me today. I'm super stoked to be talking to you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to just dive headfirst. So what you guys did and have done in terms of farming a specific neighborhood is just, it blew my mind. So to give people just really quick context, you guys have only been working together for about 4 years. From starting a neighborhood within 12 months, you guys did a 17 times return on investment, which is staggering. Let's kind of jump in right away. How did you go about picking a neighborhood?
We truly believe when it comes to farming in a neighborhood, you have to select the right neighborhood. And that's defined from an agent's perspective. That's going to be different for all of us. For us as well, it's a mathematical equation to begin with, is to really answering the question, do we invest or not? We look at turnover. Turnover is important to understand if homes are moving. We looked at it over a 10-year period. And our goal was to understand or be right around 5% consistently. What we found in the neighborhood is it was as high as 10. It could have been as low as 3.5. But on average, we saw about 40 homes move over time.
Before we jump too far ahead, for people who are brand new to looking at farms and looking at the slice, what specific numbers are you looking at and comparing to come up with your 5%?
Great question. So when we look at the turnover rate, we look at the number of homes sold in a given year, which is the numerator. Denominator is going to be the number of homes in the community itself. So for us, this community was 800 home sites. So we looked at 40 as kind of that benchmark.
When you were doing this evaluation, obviously you had to come up with a baseline of what numbers made sense. How many neighborhoods did you compare before deciding on this one, that this one was the strongest out of everything you were seeing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it leads into, there was three components how we identified a neighborhood. And really this third component is understanding where you have an authentic connection. Start there. Right. Relating back to this particular community, we had worked there as teenagers. It's a bundled golf course community, the closest one to the beach in Naples. Having some prior relationships, we call these homeowners OGs. Some of those homeowners are actually mentors in our professional careers prior to being in real estate. So we knew we had that connection. Jason and I are both golfers, so we could also speak the lingo, and we have that in-depth knowledge and understanding that not only is Naples the number one golf capital of the world with over 100 courses, right? There's nuances on the different types of courses in Naples, and we had that knowledge prior. So we felt it made sense to say, hey, let's look at the financial metrics of the neighborhood and the turnover, because we already know we have the connection from a messaging standpoint and being able to relate back to the consumer. So let's take it that step further and look at the financials. That's when we did that. And then there was a second layer on the financials to see from a marketing perspective on if it made sense or not.
That's such an interesting way to approach it. I really appreciate that you looked not just at the numbers, but as at the people, the individuals. This is their hobby. This is our hobby. And this is clear overlap between the two. Jason, you look like you wanted to chime in with something. You lit up when you started talking about golf.
I light up for this reason, passion. When you really look at your authentic self, the one way you can gain trust with somebody is to show your passion as well. Share that story that you have as a person, because that's how you're going to make that deeper connection, which of course, yes, we are in sales. So we want to get to a transaction level, but making those deeper connections is not just the short-term win. It's the long-term win in that quick time frame. And you can do that through your passions. Now, so that's why I light up.
It's true. I mean, when you're, my stepson is incredibly excited and enthusiastic about Porsches, so much so I started to look at Porsches on my own. I was like, and so you're right. When somebody's really genuinely excited, there is a level of it's infectious and it spreads. And if it's something they're already passionate about, like if somebody's already passionate about golf and you get super stoked on this specific course, I can absolutely see how it just accelerates the process, because you're building a bond and they're seeing you're just not another salesperson trying to hit them over the head to get them to buy or sell XYZ. Smart strategy. So let's kind of dig the next layer into this, because obviously marketing it's very nuanced. It's very tricky. It's very easy to get wrong. Very easy to get wrong. So you picked the neighborhood, you ran your numbers, you figured out a story, a narrative. How did you begin to communicate with that group?
Right before that step in terms of the messaging was answering the question to look at who was the dominant realtor in the neighborhood and how were they marketing properties? When we looked at the total sales and understanding that dominant realtor had 26% market share, and the other transactions, it was very fragmented. I learned early on in my career in one of the tech companies that I work for, and how they started is they saw an opportunity because the market was fragmented. At that time, there was 53 competitors and no one had a dominant market share. And when you look at real estate on our side, it's the same thing. And that answered the question for us, is it made financial sense and there was an opportunity to take market share. So when we flipped over to messaging, we believe that the future of real estate is very targeted. It's creating personalized experiences. It's not a block and tackle. It's very much white glove service. So we wanted to understand, what do the homeowners care about? What's important to them? We looked at the different property types. We looked at the developer. We looked at the different floor plans. We looked at what properties were trading more often than the others, right? A single family home in the community was not trading that often versus a coach home versus a second story middle unit condo. And having that ability to then, okay, pair that with our messaging. So we're talking specific, so they feel like we're speaking specifically to them. In the world that I used to come, very bluntly called this, you know, the old way is kind of that spray and pray of same message, same time, same person. Well, the new way, I think, in terms of market share is right message at the right time to the right person, because you're leading with that customer centric approach and you're meeting them where they are in their journey.
Same page. I feel that hand curated it's taking precedence, especially in our industry. The way that it's trending. I mean, not for nothing, but a home, as we've heard this time and time again, it's usually people's number one investment. And so the first tier is they really genuinely have to trust whoever they're handing literally the keys over to facilitate the transaction. And so, yeah, that's spray and pray, man. I tried that. I spent thousands of dollars and had crappo results. It was the worst experience because I didn't understand this at the time. And I just went head in. I'm like, this will work. And it totally didn't. And so stepping back, reevaluating and figuring this out, it's really brilliant that you came into this arena, the real estate game, with this past experience. Within that, my question is, when you were researching the people you were communicating to, was there something within that you found to be surprising as the core thing that they were about?
I think Jason is probably the better one to answer this question, and something he's passionate about in terms of educating clients.
Definitely the better question for me, for sure. So thanks for that, Brian. Let me take the lead here. I think one of the things I like to always do with every client is to educate. Brian and I have our primary goals first. Just when we get to that sales level of a presentation, it's not necessarily to get a sale. It's to educate, to make them make a hard decision on who they're choosing. Of course, we want that to go in our back pocket. So when we really looked at this, we talked, we had some sales history. When I say some sales, under 1% prior to entering this year of really creating the farm strategy and flywheel. And we went to those, and those are third-party endorsements. So previous sales history, one or two, and says, what is the experience at? What do you want to go to? So it's really leaning on your endorsements. And when we talk farm, we talk about third party. How can we grow? I think Brian really touched on it from the education side, is lean into those people that have helped you already. That's going to help us better. So in this case, with this farm, it was the experience that the dominant realtor was giving to the homeowner. The homeowner felt, in what we were told, were undervalued property values. Why is my transaction trending at the same value it was a year and a half ago and everything else is going up? Well, that's a great question. Let me educate you on where everything else is, and let's tell you our opinion of price and try it. And so we really looked at that early on and says, hey, maybe we do have an undervalued situation in this community, and we're going to have an uphill challenge of homeowners telling us we're crazy. But, certainly having experience in sales, you're not crazy. If you don't put it out there with the data and the information, you're never going to know what the result is going to be on the other side. And so it takes the broker and takes a seller in our business to make those decisions. Well, as a broker, we're not a decision maker. We're a facilitator. And so we really looked at just the education side and really drove down after hearing it's undervalued, and also the dominant realtor not giving what we consider is a qualified experience.
Within that, back when you first started this whole process and you got your first, second, third listing appointment, which is still pretty early on, the dominant agent is going to lead the conversation with, well, I've sold X amount of homes. I'm clearly the expert. What was your rebuttal to that to ultimately win them over?
Yeah, so we heard a lot, and I think this is could probably resonate with a lot of agents across the nation, is I live in the community, I'm the expert, versus we did not live in the community. Yes, we knew golf. Yes, previous, when Brian mentions we used to work in the community, it was 15 years prior. So there's this large gap. And so anytime it would get brought up to us, is we were just saying we have professional sales backgrounds is the first lean into. Well, I spent my entire career in sales. I understand sales. Let me show you our approach. And so it was really just putting it out there saying we have an expertise in sales. Yes, it may not be in this community to start, but from a process standpoint, we know how to cross the finish line for sales. And so as it got on, we know just from the feedback we've gotten is the experience they get with us is a professional experience. That's reflected in there's been a common theme recently, and I'll share, Sean, is genuine. That is no question a common theme of who Brian and I are. So we're grateful to see that reflective in our feedback on Google from it. And it's just really leaning into those and continue to create the experience. And I think with the farm, it's putting the client at the center of everything.
That's a great reframe, by the way, when you're sitting down. And I know, and I can hear just from talking to the two of you, you've obviously well thought it out, and you did a lot of and spent a lot of time pre-framing the communication that they're receiving. So you're, in essence, and I'm putting words in your mouth, inoculating the objections before you actually sit down to talk to them.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty spot on. Both Brian, I can speak for Brian. I know he'll probably smile here, but discovery. In the stage of selling, discovery is probably your biggest asset in the sales process. Because if you don't discover right, you're never going to have more at-bats.
100%.
I would add here is And this is where I see opportunity in really, you know, the most dangerous words are, this is how we've always done it.
Oh, I hate that.
When you walk in an appointment and your competition is saying, this is how we do it, because this is how we've always done it. That lights up my eyes. That's an opportunity, because instantly we're walking in there and we're asking them questions. We want to know about their process, what's important to them. We came off a listing appointment recently, and she talked about what the experience she wants to create for anybody that walks into our home. All right. And that was from her perspective. She was a business owner. She understood it. Regardless of what I provide on a baseline, we're going to make it about that seller. And I think that's where we get we're truly genuine about that. And that's how you're going to take market share. And that's a trust building activity.
There's a quote that I'd live by from a sales perspective is, you can't influence somebody until you first understand what influences them. And the only way, to your point, Jason, is you have to ask questions. You have to enter their world. They have a picture in their mind, and unless you're asking questions, you're never going to know what that picture is. And then you're otherwise, to go back to your earlier point, Brian, you're just spraying and praying. Like, you're just throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall. You're seeing what sticks. And then you're like, do we have a deal? And that's it. And you're kind of dead in the water. Did you guys, as you were exploring in the early days of, you were evaluating the numbers and kind of going that route, did you also do focus groups? And you mentioned having mentors in the community and people that you've interacted with, but did you like sit and talk to them and in that perspective to figure out what messaging would land with them?
Yes. So, Sean, for sure, for your audience, you know, one of my backgrounds was working with large brands in the uniform industry. And when you think uniforms, think, you know, the biggest ones, UPS, American Airlines, stuff like that. And biggest takeaway was get feedback from your customer. Well, and how is that product going to be worn? How is that product going to be seen? Really become relatable in that sense. And we just tried to drive it through real estate. So yes, we went to our past clients in that community. And anytime we had an opportunity, even if it was somebody that didn't know us, that would stop us, that would compliment us, we had an engaging activity with them to draw them in. And the biggest thing was focus group. Well, can we share our marketing material with you? Granted, you know, we have emails, we can send emails, but when you have a softer approach and you draw somebody into your brand, next thing you know, they're going to turn around and be a brand advocate, and they're probably going to tell their friends, their five closest friends, about that one experience that could have been 2 minutes. And it's not about the sale itself or listing their property or them buying a property. It's just about the experience that you gave them to draw them into your brand. And so, yes, we did focus groups. We asked those questions on, what do you want? And I'll use this as a caveat. This community wanted a pre-open house for the homeowners only in the community. That was a big driving force, because the sales, there were so many upgrades and downgrades within the community that they're like, this is what we want. So Brian and I got with our broker, how can we follow, you know, our MLS Clear Cooperation Act? Ours is 24 business hours. So on every one of our listings within the community, we do a pre-open house 24 hours in advance. We do it the day before. We know that the next day we're going to list the property. We go to the seller and say, here's our commission structure. Here's an opportunity for us to most likely double side the deal. Our GCI goes up and you save more money on the net side if this opportunity gets a sale prior to the open market. Now, I would say we're probably, you know, 20% with, when it comes to off market, 15, 20, somewhere in that range, but the seller benefits net and we make more money. So it creates this win-win, and it's what the community wanted. So in the short term, as we talk about this conversation, you know, we're a few years into this flywheel for us, that it's now almost expected for us to do our pre-open house, which, I mean, one of them, we had 30 plus groups come in. Our last one, which we closed today on, in a 22 day for a condo association, 12 days on the actual approval. So incredible. We just set a record price in the community. and I switched it over right before this call. That had 16 or 17 groups come through in a down market and where the consumer is not really there. And that was just the pre-open house. Yeah. So thank you for the congrats too, by the way. But yeah, I mean, continue to drive what the homeowner there wants, because that's going to lean them into your brand. And then it exposes your brand to more people based on the experience that they get from you.
When a neighbor sees that you were successful with their neighbor who they've known for years, they're having conversations behind your back.
Yeah.
It pays it forward to just really do all of these little things. Clearly it shows up in the success of your business. So kudos and congrats again on that closing today. Those always feel good, especially when we're in a bit of a challenged market as we are.
Well, I think it's one of the things I love about Compass here is Robert often talks about one of the competitive advantages of Compass, and his philosophy is showing that you care. Showing that you care through actions will create a feeling with your consumer. And at every opportunity, every interaction, every touch point, truly showing the consumer that you care, you're playing the long game. This wasn't a short-term thing for us. It's very much long-term to set a foundation from a revenue channel standpoint. And it's something I'm super proud of us for, of what we have accomplished in just a short amount of time.
Sean, I'd love to share with the audience I know the 17X is great and all, but my biggest takeaway is the pipeline it delivers. I mean, we're north for going into 2024. We're at just around 25 million in pipeline for just that community. And I think that's the really big win when you look at building the relationship, putting the client at the center of everything on the action side is, you know, we have this foundational business going forward that could really weather the storm. I mean, we are in current market, we're in this challenging market. You know, where that direction goes, none of us know here, but certainly building pipeline is an advantage that this farming brings us.
And I would say we're in a challenging market because of interest rates. And this is being recorded before it's obviously being dropped. So there's going to be a little bit of lag, but there's a lot of lawsuits happening with NAR, which is going to change the landscape of listing agents versus buyer's agents. And pre-positioning now as a listing agent is going to, it'll serve you tenfold in the future because of the two. It's the safer of the two bets. And sadly, I feel like we're cab drivers, taxi drivers at the onset of Uber being announced. And we're all like, nah, we're too big to be impacted by this. So I really see the value in what you guys are doing now to protect yourselves in the future.
And we've thought of that. Yeah, that's been definitely knowing the lawsuit's been around and what direction it could go. But we've definitely had those conversations.
It's obviously terrifying to think about, but we have to think about it and we have to preemptively make decisions because we are businesses and it's the nature of the beast. But let's kind of, Brian, move a little bit back to the nuts and bolts of picking the neighborhood and solidifying it down, figuring out your message. And let's talk about, are you doing physical mailers? Are you door knocking? Are you doing online ads with pixels? Like what vehicle are you using to get this message out there?
So we use several vehicles to get it out there. I want to be in their inbox. I want to be on their mailbox and I want to be on their socials at the bare minimum. So for what has worked for us, and this was a part of the research, is early on, I was more digitally focused because you have a larger cash runway. Jason was more on the print side in saying that the audience or the homeowners relate to print. They want to touch and feel. And when we were showing up on listing presentations and they had our print material on the table, the reality was I had to eat that and say, hey, from a budget standpoint, we should probably invest more in print because it's getting these opportunities. We layer it. We send two print materials. We have a cornerstone piece that is sent quarterly. It's a trifold. We use every opportunity to differentiate ourselves. So when every single print piece is gloss, because it's cheap. We're doing matte or soft touch because it allows us to stand out.
Smart.
And then we do a 6-week postcard. We're very conscious on our budget. Even though the community had 800 homes, we only hit, out of the 10 campaigns that we sent, we only hit the homes 56% of the time. And I think that's really important, is to be very strategic around that, is you don't have to hit every single home in order to be successful and, you know, take market share. So quarterly piece, six-week postcard. We then do a digital ad. We've created a custom audience of those homeowners. The content that is on the digital ad will match the print materials. So they're seeing that same message. And then that's also in our monthly newsletter to them as well. So we're touching them multiple times. They're seeing our brand. They're seeing us within the community as well. So events are important.
It's tough to have these ideas and to run with them and not be married to them, and then go out in the wild and actually see what's working and what's not working and saying, hey, I was wrong. We should actually be doing this. So I tip my hat. That's hard. Because I know for me, I get married to these ideas. I'm like, oh, we spent so much time and energy on this. Let's keep going. And it's the reality is, hey, it might not be working, or it's the right thing, but it's the wrong audience. Within this group that you're targeting, so you have 800 names or addresses. How are you high grading? Which ones are you specifically going after? Are you going after them all? How are you segmenting your lists?
So there's 5 different property types within the community. There's 2 different single family homes. So we kind of start there. The larger estate homes in the community are more of a long play. Sure, they have a higher price point, but they don't trade that often. So we think about it as we worked up to the single family home. Now we target every single family home in the community. Prior, we really focus on kind of that mid-tier, so the lower single-family home option, but then also the coach home. And the other 2 property types are going to be on the condo side. The 2-bedroom condo doesn't trade often, and especially when it's on the second floor. So we've kind of eliminated them. Now, if it's an individual who's a brand champion or advocate for us, they receive all our materials.
Do you high grade within that to look at the individual? Do you look at somebody who is aging out of a home, wanting to downsize, potentially upsize? Like, are you looking at another layer within property type?
I would say we don't do that today. We do know within this community that there is upgrades and downgrades. So kind of going back to playing the long game on the single family homes. So once we were able to establish, kind of getting that first sale of a single family and build upon that, is we're always going to be a part of the conversation. Hey, I noticed that you have the most recent single family home sales. We would like to talk to you. Well, as a result of targeting the smaller price point, the coach homes or the smaller single family and condos, we built a buyer pool for the upgrades. And then marketing the single family homes, we've now created a buyer pool for the condos and coach homes. And that kind of alludes to Jason's earlier point, is pipeline development. So now we have these two different buyer pools for all property types within the community. And we're able to leverage that in those pre-open houses that benefit the seller.
I'll just add, like, we have one fully executed for July closing. All done, ready to go. And both sides, it's a roughly $3 million gross sale.
Gotta love that.
Can't be happier about a July closing already in the books for next year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're teeing up another year, that's where it's at. That's building future business for insulating your business.
Yep. Insulating it. Yep.
And you mentioned quickly, you throw in events. Do you guys do... I'm assuming you loop in golf because it's all part of it. How often do you guys go? Do you just grab everybody and be like, hey, let's go golf today?
Ironically, because we had the background of the community, the head pro happens to be the same individual we work for. So there's a few of the golf groups that are within Stonebridge, and the relationships that we had were some of the bigger golfers in the community themselves. So I asked to be a part of their golf groups. When somebody would cancel last minute, I would say, I'll be your fill-in last minute. So you always have somebody. And they're like, really? And twice a week, I would be the fill-in, and it would be the night before. So I would, just like time blocking for cold calls, I would time block my schedule based on when those groups played. And if I got the call the night before, I'd be playing golf the next day. And it happens probably 4 to 6 times during the season months, which is our peak season. But it worked. And that allowed us to have lunch. Now, we layered on top having lunch twice a week at the country club. And we would go in particular outfits. So from a branding standpoint, think of a UPS guy coming to your community, a brown stands out. So we would be consistent in the same outfit each week, just to be seen. The goal wasn't for conversation. It was to pick up the phone call later on, because I don't want to let my neighbors know about you coming to talk to me about selling. But yeah, the golf was great. Between the head pro, making sure we were be allowed as a guest, and the groups having that last minute fill in spot, which saved them. Each time I was the hero. It wasn't like, you know, hey, Jason's filling in, he's taking a spot. No, I was the hero for taking the spot because they got the chance to take my money.
That's genius.
It was a win-win.
It's such an incredibly smart way to approach it, because you're having non-real estate conversations, which builds likability, it builds trust, they get comfortable and familiar with you, and it just makes everything else smoother.
And like the conversations, the non-real estate conversations, you know, sports gets talked about, what are your hobbies? Somebody gets to really know you on a golf course because you're spending 4 hours with them. And I'd be the guy that would say, listen, I deal with real estate every day. This is my pleasure. Can we just have a little fun and talk shit? And most all the guys would be like, yeah, absolutely. This is great. We can't wait to take your money. And so there'd be that competitiveness going back and forth. But then naturally, the real estate conversation would come up towards the end. All right, now you got to talk to us about real estate. We've been blowing you up on all the golf stuff. So it would lead into the real estate conversation naturally and what we were doing in the community and our backgrounds. And I mean, I just know one guy I showed a property to 2 weeks ago. I played him in the golf and he remembered me from 2 years prior. And he's like, that was one of my best rounds I played with you. Well, I don't remember the round, but he did. And that was what was important. And now he's coming to me in a setting where now, you know, this is what I'm looking for. If you can facilitate something, you know, so now he's in the buyer pipeline, and that allows us to leverage sellers a little bit into our strategy of, hey, can we get off market? Net number goes higher for you. We make more commission. Here's an opportunity before you got to compete.
It's so good. And it goes back to your point of, which I really like, that you actually read the reviews and you hear what people are saying, and they're saying genuine. It really does. It reads and comes across as very genuine, very authentic. And it's, if we just think about our own personal lives, if we're hanging out with our dentist on the golf course all the time, seeing them multiple times, let's say even just multiple times a year, when it comes time for me to go to that appointment, there's a different relationship. Actually, the guy I just went to an eye exam, and I've gone to the same eye doctor. I've known him for 20 years. I knew him 3 careers ago. He's still practicing, and we spend the front end of the appointment just catching up. And I will never go to another dentist, or eye doctor rather, because there's this bond of relationship there. And he doesn't have to sell me. Like if I say, hey, do you recommend this? Whatever opinion he gives me at that point, there's so much trust, I just go with it. There's a different level of non-resistance that just, it's just, we're on a different page. And it sounds like you've gotten there.
I can relate to the eye doctor. I have same one for 25 years, and he's going to be thorough. He's going to check all of his boxes because he wants to ensure that I have the right prescription. I might stay at the doctor a little bit longer, but that's just how he operates. And I love that. And it's to your point, it's the trust factor is I know he's ensuring that I have the best prescription for my eyes. And I think that's just goes back into our business as well. It's trust is so important. Being human is one of my favorite things about this is right. Being human in our business is vitally important to the future success.
I genuinely feel that the big trend that's going to happen with our within our real estate, it's very much going to be hinged upon that human aspect of it and that hand curated that you guys talked about right from the onset of this episode is people more and more are going to want to know they're being taken care of. And it's because it is such an incredibly stressful selling a home is on the top three. It's of the top three most stressful things that you can deal with in your life.
Oh yeah.
And so knowing that somebody's actually got your back and not just saying I got your back, but actually being supportive and being there with you through it, total game changer.
I can relate to this because I just had this conversation. The deal we just closed, we represented both parties. Now, what buyers and sellers don't know of me is I don't really like representing both parties. I just get anxiety. That's an internal thing for me because you're so hands-on and one party could say the broker is trying to dictate to help the other party more. And that's not the case with me. I'm a cards on the table. But the buyer, tough situation. It really wasn't the buyer. The son ended up buying the house for the mom, but the mom was the buyer. And the mom's like, oh my God. She says a comment after the inspection. She goes, you really have our best interest at heart. I said, yeah, I have the seller's best interest for them too. But I'm not here to say the seller has one side or the other. I'm here to say the transaction. So I represent myself as a broker in Florida, as a transaction broker. And that comment alone has already offered the trust of the son that referred us. He referred us only because he wanted to get a commission for his mom before they wrote a contract. But now I have a meeting with him when I go to Denver in 40 days. I'm going to go have coffee and we're going to talk business out there as far as spec business because his son does spec builds in North Carolina. They want to figure out how to do it in Florida based on some pro forma stuff. So kind of changing that conversation back and how it leads into once you're over a hurdle with any party whatsoever and they gain your trust, that floodgate and that door opens and the selling aspect for Brian and I come in to play because we always want to know more about our clients. You know, where can we pivot to? That's not a past client. That's an active client. So how do we gain more business from that active client? Doesn't need to be that day in a short term. It could be in 3 years, but we just want to know how to be in front of them at that right time.
It's the philosophy of what's the opportunity within the opportunity.
Oh yeah, exactly.
It goes back to your previous point is you have to ask questions. You have to understand what else are they working on? What are they doing? Otherwise, if you didn't ask those questions and follow up and be persistent and be curious in a genuine relationship way, you wouldn't have found out all these other pieces and components of it, which that's how you actually build these businesses out. Yeah, I really genuinely, I love your approach, both of you. And I can totally see where you're yin and yang of balancing each other out on front end and back end and who's looking at the numbers here and who's the face out in front of the business. And I think it's, you guys do have an unfair advantage from being siblings, but it clearly is working very, very well for you.
Yep. Thank you very much. Yeah. The yin and yang is a lot of fun because we sound alike so much on the phone, but typically a client after the first meeting gets into the second, they exactly know what you identified is there is a big difference, the front of the house and the back of the house.
Yeah. It's kind of, you guys have like the perfect setup because it's the marketing brain in the sales brain. I mean, sales and marketing are always like kind of these two different worlds, regardless of the industry or business, but you guys have it just right there, ready to go. It's great. I love it. We are actually, we're at time, and I would love to keep this conversation going, but unfortunately we've run out. We've turned a corner. So thank you both for joining me. My dad lives in Florida, so we'll have to plan a time from when I fly out to meet him to sync up with you guys as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. We will make every effort wherever you're at. We'll figure something out.
Appreciate it. All right, you guys. And that is a wrap.